This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, publishers of Zymergy magazine and host of HomebrewCon, the annual family gathering of homebrewers. Visit homebrewersassociation.org and learn about the benefits of membership. homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, March 7th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, David Curtis from Bell's General Store in Kalamazoo, Michigan, joins us to talk about Centennial Hops that come straight from Bell's Brewery, now available for home brewers. We also asked David to take our hop sampler beers to the lab to see if there's any correlation between my HSBU theory and actual measured IBUs. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear, including our tie-dye silicone pint and our Basic Brewing Brewing Rainbow shirt. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, they say that'll help new listeners to find us. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Something weird happened this week. Last year, I posted a video on YouTube and our Basic Brewing video podcast feed that demonstrated how to do a kettle sour with an Instant Pot. You make a wort, you inoculate it with probiotics, you put it in a jug, you sour it in the Instant Pot, and then you put it into a kettle to pasteurize it, and then at that point you add hops before chilling it and pitching the yeast to ferment. Well, a few days ago, somebody commented on YouTube, on that YouTube video, that a Belgian television station had used that episode of Basic Brewing Video as the basis of a segment basically making fun of Steve and me. They said something like, "These crazy Americans think they can make good beer in 3 days in a pressure cooker." Well, they were speaking in French, but well, first of all, that's not what we say in the video. We don't say, "Hey, you can make beer in 3 days in a pressure cooker." And the reporter in the story goes on to try to replicate our beer. So he essentially goes through the souring process, then bottles the unfermented wort without fermenting the beer with yeast. So, of course, everybody who serves this concoction, this unfermented sour wort concoction, you know, everybody who serves it to on the show hates it. And I think I would, too. You think that Belgians just come shooting out of the womb knowing everything about how to brew beer, but maybe stuff got lost in translation. I don't know. I think the whole thing is hilarious. And it's just wild to see Steve and me on Belgian TV speaking with French subtitles. I feel like Jerry Lewis all of a sudden. I appreciate the person on YouTube who called my attention to that. And I put a link to the Belgian website where you can see that video on our Facebook page. So check that out along with our original YouTube video and judge for yourself what happened there. Famous for half a second in Belgium. That little Instant Pot kettle sour beer was it was delicious, and I stand by it. I think I might even have a bottle or two left of that batch in the little fridge downstairs. I wonder how much shipping to Belgium costs. I want to give a shout-out to Rob Jones and his class at Craven Community College over in North Carolina. Rob is teaching a class in homebrewing and asked me to Skype in and talk to them about experimentation and small batch brewing yesterday evening. And I really enjoyed talking to him, and I hope that they got something out of it too. Lots of good beer stuff going on in North Carolina. Be fun to check that out one day. Let's talk about our friends and sponsors, Imperial Organic Yeast. Everybody that I've talked to who uses Imperial Yeast loves the stuff. Imperial offers the highest cell count of any liquid producer, 200 billion cells. My stir plate is dusty because I no longer make starters for standard gravity 5-gallon batches. I'm just amazed at how quickly Imperial yeast gets started after pitching because they take care of their product and ship fresh, and the stuff is just ready to go to work. Steve Wilkes of stevesbrewshop.com has bragged on this program about how the yeast always gets to him cold and well-packaged. Imperial is the only manufacturer of certified organic yeast in the world. They have top-notch customer service. If you call them, you can talk to a real live human being who will answer your questions. And you may remember that they were the ones who started off in the little cans, which were kind of cool, but not the easiest to work with, to tell you the truth. Now, Imperial comes in big, easy-open pouches that are super easy to mix the yeast up and simply pour into the fermenter. As I'm writing this, I'm doing some quality assurance right now with a pale ale that I brewed with Imperial 807 Flagship, and it is super tasty. Ask your local homebrew store owner. I'm shampering. Ask your local homebrew store owner about Imperial organic yeast. Beer that I'm sampling is delicious. It's a clone or an attempted clone of Bell's Two Hearted Ale that I found on the American Homebrewers Association website, and David and I talk a little bit about that on the show today. I dry hopped with 5 ounces of the Bell's Select Centennial hops. And I don't normally dry hop. I tell you, I'm too lazy to tell you the truth. However, this batch may have changed my mind on the whole dry hopping thing because the hop character is nice and bright. I have one of those plastic conical fermenters that I got from Steve, in fact, that you can attach a mason jar to the bottom. And that made it really easy to plop a big bag of hops, into the big open top there. I've used that fermenter a few times, and it has a valve on the bottom where you can close off the mason jar and dump the trub out of it. And then you can sanitize the jar and then put it back on and then open the valve again to dump more trub. But the problem is every time you do that, a mason jar full of air goes bubbling up through your finished beer and exposing it to oxygen. So I've brewed a couple of beers that I thought would turn out really fresh and hoppy, but after I dumped the trub and, ran that air up through them, they weren't so hoppy. So I'm just wondering if that's because of the exposure to O2. So this time I didn't dump the trub. I just used an auto siphon to rack the beer into the keg, from the top of the fermenter. And I'm really happy with the hop character this time. So I will continue to use that fermenter every now and then because it is lighter than a glass carboy and pretty easy to clean. But I'm not going to dump the trub anymore. I'm not going to run the air up through there. Be curious to see if you have something like that and if you've had similar experiences as well. There's something that I am completely happy with, and that's my gear from our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. My Warthog electric brew-in-a-bag system that I got from High Gravity is still working like a charm. It's a pleasure to use it, and I never worry about hitting or maintaining mash temperatures, and I can accurately dial in boil strength with the Warthog controller, and it's super easy to clean because it's got a simple kettle design. But of course, High Gravity also offers 2 and 3 vessel systems from 5 gallons up to 2 barrels, if you want to go that way. Dave builds them himself in the back of the shop, so if you have any questions, you can talk to the person who put it together. And if you go to highgravitybrew.com, you can see their awesome Build Your Own Beer page. It's fun to just play with while you're supposed to be working, You'll see an extensive list on that page of pretty much everything you'd need to put together a recipe. It's amazing, the variety of ingredients at High Gravity stocks. And as you build a recipe, your running total is always visible at the bottom of the window. Check it all out at highgravitybrew.com. And if you use the code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric brewing purchase. Take the pain out of propane at highgravitybrew.com. Okay, a little while ago, David Curtis from up at Bell's sent me an email saying that he had some new hops for sale and asked if I wanted to experiment with them. Well, I said, yes, of course. And being greedy as I am, I asked David if he would see if the lab at Bell's Brewery would test some of the small batches that I've been making for the Hop Sampler series to see if my hop stand bittering units formula had any basis in reality or practicality in relation to measured IBUs. Forgive me if I act a little bit like a fanboy for Bell's Beers. David Curtis, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having me back.
Now, we had you back a while back, several years ago now, probably, and you were helping us to do some experiments, or you did some experiments in adding hops in different locations and using the labs up there at Bell's to give us some results. And then we did some sensory stuff. And so that was a lot of fun because, you know, I felt like that was one of the shows where, you know, we combined the sensory side or kind of the artistic side with the scientific side, you know, with the data, and got to actually compare, you know, both of those sides of the brain. So I appreciate your coming back on and helping me again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That was a lot of fun. We did kind of a bunch of different first wort hops versus mash hops versus 60-minute boiling additions, and we had lots of people tasting, and we had labs involved, and that was pretty cool.
How are things up at Bell's? I take it since you've got, what, the favorite beer in America now, things are pretty good.
Yeah, life is pretty good with as far, you know, Two Hearted is pretty much a household name, I think, for a lot of beer lovers. We've got a couple new, we just released a brand new beer called Official, which I'm pretty excited about. It's like a hazy IPA is what we call it. It's kind of got a good amount of wheat in it, and it's got some of the new hip hops involved in some dry hops and things like that, and that's a really tasty beer. So not that I'm pushing beers here, but if anybody's on the lookout for something new to try, it's called Official. I'm a big fan. I'm drinking one right now, actually.
Well, you know, those hazy beers, they're not going to go anywhere. Nobody will like those.
No. Yeah, they're a short-term thing.
Well, unfortunately for my waistline, you guys sell the 12-pack of Two Hearted in cans, and it's readily accessible down here. So,
yeah, you and me both. I drink a lot of those.
Well, it's delicious stuff. But you contacted me because you said that you've got you manage the homebrew shop up there still, right?
Yes, sir.
So you said that you've got some new access to some new hops.
Yeah, new is kind of a technical term there. these are hops that come from our brewery. So a lot of people may or may not know that homebrew hops are generally, or that the hops that are available to the homebrewers are generally kind of the bottom of the barrel, the last pick. And I don't know, I'm not that familiar with how the whole process works, but our brewers go out west every year and hand select with certain growers which hops they want. And we're, since we use 100% Centennial and Two Hearted, we're the world's biggest user of Centennial hops. So they go out and they get first dibs on all the Centennials and choose what they want to use for us to use it to make Two Hearted. And then everyone else kind of gets picks after that. And somewhere down the line, homebrewers get their pick. So these are hops that come to our brewery to be used in Two Hearted, and they have such a, you know, they buy so much of them and they have a lot of extra that they're able to share some with us in our store. And then we bought some packaging equipment, some nitrogen flush sealer, and we actually package them in homebrew sizes.
And you're able to do the nitrogen flushing and all that?
Yeah, we spent some money on a little sealer that does like a, it blows, or it sucks the air out, then it blows nitrogen, and then it sucks the air out again and does it two or three times and then seals it up. And, you know, we've been pretty happy with it. It's a very manual intensive process. I mean, we have two guys where we measure them out and one guy measures and one guy seals, and it's a labor of love. And the room smells great, but it's a lot of work to get them packaged. But we've been doing 1 ounce packages, and then we do them for our kits, which are a couple different sizes. And I'm doing 4 ounce and 8 ounce packages. So we take a 22 pound bag from the brewery and bust that out in a couple hours, and it's pretty cool.
And these aren't a different strain from the Centennial hops that we usually get. They're just a little fresher, a little better.
Yeah, they shouldn't be. They should be the same strain. I mean, if you were to get a Centennial Rhizome and grow it in your backyard, I don't know enough about plants to know how the strains differ from each other. But these are grown under the optimal conditions out west. They're the ones that our brewers select for their various characteristics. We get a lot of people that come into our store that, Two Hearted is what they love. They're a new brewer, and that's what they want to do. They want to make Two Hearted at home or something like that. And then, a lot of people have said, yeah, I've got it all dialed in. It's just something's not there. And I think that this is part of that missing piece, is that these hops have a little bit more character to them. And, I hope they do. I've used them, and we're going to talk a little bit more about how they taste and things like that. But I think that there's definitely a difference between growers and conditions and where they're grown and how they're grown and all that kind of, and how they're packaged and things like that. So I'm pretty proud of, Two Hearted Ale as a beer to be part of that brewery. And I think that those hops are a huge, obviously probably the biggest part of what makes Two Hearted. And I think that if that's a character you like, then hopefully these are hops that you'll like as well.
Yeah. So you said, you asked me if I wanted to put them to the test. And I said, sure.
Of course.
And then you said, how much would you need to test with? And I said, well, how much have we got? So anyway, so I just needed an ounce or two to test. But you were very generous in the amount of hops that you sent me. If you like Two Hearted Ale. If you're a member of the AHA and you go to the American Homebrewers Association website and search, there is a clone recipe that David submitted to the AHA, and you can download that, print that off, and brew it for yourself. And I went to Steve's homebrew shop today and got the ingredients to do it myself with the Bell's hops that you sent me. So I'm really looking forward to that. But what I did was I said, well, why don't we put these hops against, sort of the homebrew hops that you also sell at your shop. And so what I did was I did the recipe that we do for the hop sampler. So I took 1 pound or 450 grams of Pilsen light dry malt extract, and I put that in 3 quarts of water. And I brought that just up to the boil and shut off the heat. And I brewed 2 batches. I did this twice. In one, I put 14 grams of the Bell's Centennial in there, which is at 9.2% alpha acid. And in the other, I did the sort of regular Centennial, which is 12 grams of that at 10.8% alpha acid. And then I let that sit at a hop stand for 30 minutes. And then after that, I chilled it and pitched it with 3 grams of Safale USO5. And then that made a 6-pack. And I sent some to you. And I also did some testing, some sensory testing here at the house. So I enlisted my friend Alex Roberts, who is here doing another test with me. To taste these two beers side by side. Now, David, is there anything that you want to say before we get into that tasting?
I would just say that this was the first kind of side by side, and I was very excited to hear this. So I appreciate you doing that. That's all I want to say.
So here we go back to the past in the breakfast nook with me and Alex tasting some tasty beers. Alex Roberts, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you, James. Good to be here.
Yeah, we just did an experiment outside with the chiller and the stirring and the all this kind of stuff, and we no spoilers on that. But while you were here, I thought that I would ply you with some tasty beers and do a little experiment. So, first of all, what do you think of the concept? What do you think of the beers overall? Did they taste like normal beers? I mean, did they taste like, you know, normal pale ales? You know, I described the process that I went through to make these, and it's super easy. But would you pay for a pint of that in the tap room somewhere?
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I think I was actually quite surprised when you told me how these were made, because I didn't expect that. I mean, they're very good.
Yeah, we were talking outside about how how much work brewing can be, especially on the cleanup side of things. And then when your ears perked up when I told you how easy this was.
Right.
Well, you can do it on full scale batches, too. So, you know, it's super easy. So we have two different kinds of Centennial here. We have A and B, and I know which is which. So I may be a little influenced by that, but you don't. You're doing a blind tasting. So what did you, first of all, what did you think of beer A?
Between the two, it seemed a lot fruitier to me, both in the aroma and in the flavor. You know, I picked up a lot more citrus and orange in it, but not really much of a, like the typical hop bite, you know, in the mouth. Afterwards, you know, there was a longer aftertaste that kind of the pine and the grass started to come in, but I never picked up those flavors. But the aftertaste to me was distinctly different than the flavors of the beer.
Yeah, I thought it was more citrusy and more fruity as well. What did you think of B?
B both smelled pinier and tasted that way. I got less fruit. Still picked up on some like orange flavors. But there was, I definitely tasted, you know, the pine and the grassy in the flavor. And I thought the aftertaste, you know, it was more pronounced, grassier in the aftertaste and a little more bitter as well. And it seemed to be a stronger aftertaste that lingered longer as well.
So, when Susan, we were bottling these beers, Susan on B said, it tasted more. Right. So it sounds like, what you're saying.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. It seems like to be a little bit more multi-layered. You're right. The pine comes out more. It's still fruity, but I think it's tasty as well. It seems a little more complex than the first one. So without trying not to send you any signals, which one did you prefer one over the other?
I think, yeah, generally I preferred B. I like the hop characteristics. They seem to stand out a little more. The first one was, I mean, more along the lines of maybe a pale ale, and the second one tasted more along the lines of an IPA. I mean, as far as the bitterness distinction between the two.
Well, A is the kind of off-the-shelf Centennial that you can get anywhere, and B is the one that came from Bell's and is their exclusive product. So what do you think? I mean, if you were designing a beer, if you were designing a pale ale, would you prefer, I guess it sounds like you would prefer B.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I guess it kind of depends on, you know, what you want your final product to be. But if you were, you know, going for more of the hop forward kind of beer, you know, I'd definitely pick B.
I've been drinking a lot of Two Hearted Ale recently, and so maybe that's why I'm drawn to B. My palate has been trained by those darn handy and tasty 12 packs of cans.
Yeah, it's hop slam time of year too, though. So yeah, I mean, but you don't get to drink as many of those.
Well, this has been fun. I certainly appreciate your time out on the patio, and we'll visit on a later podcast about that. But thanks for your time with this experiment here.
Yeah, and thanks for the beer.
So there you go. I've got some samples here, live on the mic here, and I'm tasting them. And that Bell's hop, the Bell's Centennial, is pretty darn tasty. Both of the beers I thought were good beers, delicious beers, but it seemed like that Bell's hop had just a little bit more. And you guys did. I sent some bottles up to you for sensory evaluation as well. Is that what you guys thought?
Yeah. I also want to say that, you know, I'm not on your show just to sell these hops. I'm a home brewer and I get excited about things like new products like this. And I'll be honest, I kind of last couple of years, home brewing's kind of fallen by the wayside with kids and family and stuff. But in the last 6 months or so, between Imperial Yeast and these hops and some other investments I made in my home brewing setup, I've kind of gotten back into it. And it's got me excited about brewing again. So I want home brewers to check these out because they're exciting to me and I think they'll like them. I hope this doesn't come across as a sales pitch. I just want to say that. I have a meeting every Thursday with some of my guys that we work with, and the four of us poured out your beers, and I had covered the labels so that nobody knew what was what, including myself. And we kind of came to a consensus. We didn't, you know, do anything real technical. We just kind of chatted about it. And we were kind of nervous, actually, but we were happy to see that the Bells, or the Select, we call them Centennial Select Hops, that the Select Hops were the ones that we liked. I think they were, I liked both beers. There wasn't anything bad about either one of them. I just thought that there was more depth, probably, to the Select Hops. They seemed like they had more dimension to them, a little bit more, they seemed a little fresher, I guess, is kind of the best way that I could put it.
Yeah, I think Alex said that the Select ones had a little bit more of a piney presence along with the fruitiness, and I think that nails it for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely, you know, it wasn't like a night and day kind of thing either. It was, you know, it was as much as I'd love for our hops to be, you know, that much more superior, they were both very, you know, very similar, but if you want to split hairs, which is what we really needed to do, we chose the one that you guys chose as well. So I felt good about that.
And I have to nervously be a little selfish and ask what you thought of the recipe.
I loved it. I mean, it's simple. And, for, you know, if you hadn't told me that the way you made it, I never would have guessed. It's just, so simple, and it's a good way to let the hops pop through too. So I appreciate simple recipes, and I think Two Hearted is a good example of that too. It's a very simple recipe, one hop and a couple malts, and you can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm always nervous when I send my beers out.
No, yeah, I'm the same way. I still homebrew, and I just brought some beer today to work. Just to share with some of my coworkers, I made a pilsner that I was pretty proud of, and I hadn't brought a beer to work in a while, and I was kind of like, well, what do you guys think? It was kind of nerve-wracking. They all told me they liked it, but I'm their boss, so who knows if they're being honest.
So in order for this not to be just a shameless plug for the Select Centennial Hops, David, I remembered, I said, hey, David's got access to a lab.
Yeah, take advantage of that.
So you're listening to the show. You know that I've been talking about this hop stand bittering unit formula thing that I've been playing with to try to get a handle on how to measure the amount of bitterness and hop character that we get out of these hop stands, because I can't find a formula that works. For me, can you, do you, what formula, what, how do you measure or predict bitterness, for hop stands like I've been doing?
Honestly, I don't have a good way either. I use, or I used to use, what is the brewing software that Brew Alchemy that's a Mac, the Mac software. Mm-hmm. And they kind of have a calculation that I think you put in the time that the do you use Brew Alchemy by chance?
No.
Yourself?
No.
Okay. They have like a time, like how long did this hop sit in a whirlpool or something like that. I think you can adjust it by that, and it gives it a percentage based on that. So it's kind of it's probably a wild guess, but I used to use that. Now I actually have a spreadsheet that I use, and I just don't count the flame out additions. I take them into account as I'm, like, if my IBUs are low and I have a flame out addition, I'll call that good because I know that it's going to add some to it, but I don't have a good way of calculating that. And I don't know that anybody really does at this point.
Yeah, a listener kindly sent me a link to what he's been using for hops, you know, to measure hop stand bitterness. And this online calculator I used, I actually used the Bell's version of this beer, and I put in the numbers, and it said that my predicted bittering units or IBUs for that hop stand were like, was like 1.5. So,
yeah, not to give anything away, but it's much higher than that. Yeah.
So just tasting the beers, you know that it's not just 1.5. You know there's a, right, you know, fairly substantial bitterness. So the question is, if you put, and this is, it's a small batch. So for a 3-quart beer, putting half an ounce, 14 grams, of 9.2% alpha acid hops in there, the HSBUs, which is my formula, is you take the weight of the hops in ounces. The alpha, I can't remember my own formula. The alpha acid number times the weight of the ounce, or the weight of the hops in ounces.
Yep.
Then you divide that product by the volume. So if you use that formula, then the HSBU for the Bell's Centennial version of this beer was 6.1. What I did was I took, since the other Centennial was a little bit higher in alpha acid, that's why there are different amounts of the hops in the beer. So the Bell's had 14 grams, and the Centennial had 12 grams in there. And I don't think that makes for the difference in the flavors, because it's not that the Bell's was just more bitter or just more intense. There were different flavor characteristics than the other hop. So I feel, fairly confident in that, in doing it that way and weighing the hops that way. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's, I worked in a brewery before I worked at Bell's, and that was kind of the way we calculated our hopping, was by, I think they call them homebrew units or whatever. You just take the amount of hops times the alpha acid, and that was just kind of your number. And then you divide it out by your volume, and it's kind of the same sort of thing. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So we took those, or you took those beers to the lab. We'll call Centennial A was the standard Centennials, and then Centennial B was the Bell's or the Select. Do you have those numbers in front of you?
I do. Yeah, the shelf Centennials came in at 47.6 IBUs, and the Bell's Centennial Select hops came in at 45.4.
Wow.
IBUs. So, I mean, that's splitting hairs. I mean, that to me, that's, I don't think anybody can taste the difference between a couple of IBUs like that. So that's pretty close.
No, I was impressed at how close they were. The A, even though I added less of the A, it did come out a tiny bit, a couple of points higher in IBUs than the B. But 45 and 47 IBUs for a 30-minute hop stand, where the temperature went, and I measured it a long time ago at the first batch of these I did, and the temperature in that 30-minute hop stand went from 210 degrees Fahrenheit to 155 degrees Fahrenheit. So, even though it wasn't boiling, you're still pulling a lot of bitterness out of those hops.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think they're, a lot of people say above 180 or something like that, it's still isomerizing. And I think it may be even quite a bit below that, or maybe 170, 160, something like that. But it definitely does its work for 20 minutes or so, whatever it was.
Yeah. Yeah. For half an hour at that, in that temperature range, it's isomerizing those alpha acids. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you're putting a bunch of hops into a hop stand and holding them, you got to account that it is going to bring some bitterness.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at the numbers that you had, you said they were 6 point something. Is that right?
Yeah,
your calculation.
The HSBU, the hop stand bittering units were at 6.1.
Okay, and that correlates to roughly 45. So I don't know. I don't know if there's a direct, you know, if you could just multiply by 9 or whatever that would be to get to where you got to be. But that maybe you can kind of estimate your actual IBUs if you tried a few more of these. I don't know.
Well, if we just had those two data points, you might think. But I also sent you the previous round of the hop sampler with Amarillo, Falconer's Flight, and Willamette, and the HSBUs that I shot for on those batches was around 5.5. So I put in 28 grams of Willamette at 4.2% alpha acid, 15 grams of Amarillo at 7.7, and 11 of Falconer's Flight at 11%. Did I say 15 grams of Amarillo at 7.7, 11 grams of Falconer's Flight at 11% alpha acid? So I figured that using my little formula, that would be 5.5 HSBUs.
Mm-hmm.
So where did we come out on those three beers?
Let's see. The Amarillo came out at 42.5. The Falconer's Flight was at 34.4. And the Willamette was at 31.1. So a little bit more of a range there. But I don't know. In my opinion, though, I mean, yeah, you're 11 points or so between the Willamette and the Amarillo, but there's so many factors. I think we talked about this earlier, the amount of water, a couple pellets different here and there, the rigor of your boil, things like that. I know that you've got your process dialed in really well, but there's also, you know, these hops are packaged every fall and there's a number put on the package that accounts for an entire lot of hops. And I think there's handling issues and there's all sorts of factors that go in there. So I think you're actually in a pretty tight range. If you said you were shooting or your calculator came to 5.5 for those,
mm-hmm.
and if you multiply that by 9, you're somewhere in the 40 range, which is pretty close to what those all are. So that's the same thing as the Centennials, is about 9 times more as the actual IBUs. I don't know if that means anything to you, but that I feel like you're in a pretty tight range. I didn't get a chance to try those because we had to send the samples you sent me to the lab. But I mean, if you guys can't taste the difference, what difference does it really make?
Well, I think that you know, a lot. If we could come up with a test a bunch of these beers and, you know, come up with a number, of course that would only be the number for my setup in my kitchen with this recipe, and that's part of the thing that is frustrating about, you know, this situation is that, you know, you can make a recipe at my house and then go to your house and you've got a different setup and and it's probably going to be different. So that's why I say, you know, in discussions with Steve, this is for benchmarking in your own house with your own setup. Going between beers, you know, if you like, you know, if the bitterness level is good for you at like around 6, you know, hop stand bittering units, then in a way it doesn't matter what the IBUs are measured.
Exactly.
If it tastes the way you want it to taste, then that's the benchmark that you should shoot for.
Yep. I think a lot of folks get really hung up on IBU numbers and, you know, dialing in exactly where they want to be, where, you know, the scale can be anything. It could be 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, or, you know, red to green to blue. It doesn't necessarily need to be the numbers that we use, that we're used to. An IBU range is just, it's all relative really compared to the balance of the beer. The other thing too is I'm kind of looking, we also have some data on alcohol in each of these and original gravity and things like that. And the Centennials had a little bit higher gravity than the other well, no, I guess they didn't. They were all kind of in the same range. But, like, the Amarillo had the lowest starting gravity, which also had the highest of your three IBUs and out of those three sampler beers. So maybe that has something to do with it too. And, you know, the finishing gravities are low. There's a little bit of a range there as well. So I think there's just so many factors. I mean, you're doing it at home, and for a home brewer, this is plenty close enough.
Yeah, I think that, I try to keep all the variables as the same as possible. You know, I use the 1 pound bags of extract from Breese. You know, I mm-hmm. measure three quarts of water in the same container. You know, I add the extract at the same temperature, you know, like 140 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, when the water is warm enough to dissolve it well. You know, and I watch it like a hawk, you know, but saying all that, on the first couple of rounds of these, I took gravity readings, you know, at brewing time and at bottling time, and I got consistent yep. results according to my little refractometer and my hydrometer. So I said, okay, this is good enough. I'm not going to measure anymore. So
never say that.
So who knows what happened? But yeah, like the Centennial A, the ABV according to the lab was 7.09%, and my calculation was that these beers were like 6%. So they're a little stronger than I anticipated. So
I found in my limited experience with using the lab for analysis like this is that the final gravities are typically much lower than what I read on my little triple scale hydrometer. So I've actually personally, I just ordered one of those final gravity hydrometers just because they have a wider spread between the numbers. So you can, you know, it's got a smaller range on the hydrometer. So it's supposed to be a little bit more accurate. I've gone to that now because I think that final gravities do not read as accurate as at least what the lab says, and I trust the lab.
Yeah, my little hydrometer seems to bob around at about the same range, you know, about the same level no matter what beer I brew. So maybe it's time for a new one.
Yeah, anytime I make a stout, it's a challenge for me to get below 10-20 sometimes, and I'm like, man, it just doesn't taste that, you know, that thick. And I know there's a lot of extra malts in this and specialty malts and stuff like that, but I feel like final gravity, and there's always foam. I don't know how you read yours, but I always feel like I'm waiting for the bubbles to go away when I'm taking a final gravity reading and things like that. So I think that final gravity is something that trips up a lot of home brewers and throws their expectations off a little bit.
And my, to tell you the truth, Dave, my eyes aren't as good as they used to be.
I'm getting there too.
I do have bifocals, but maybe it's time for trifocals. My dad used to work for Southwestern Bell, you know, the telephone company, and he had trifocals because, you know, he had to like mess with little wires and stuff. So I'm not there yet, but you know, maybe someday close. So the range of the ABV was at a low of 7.09 with the Centennial A to 7.43 with the Willamette. So, you know, I guess, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a tremendous amount. You know, you're talking less than half a percentage.
I agree. I think that goes to, I mean, that shows that your process is very consistent. You know, you think about the way you're doing it, and there's definitely a tolerance on the packages that come from Breese, and there's a tolerance on your scale and all sorts of different things like that. So I think that you've got it about as tight as most homebrewers can get it.
And on the bottom line is, if the beer tastes good and it comes out to your expectations, you know, when you're designing your recipe and you expect a certain thing and the beer, if it comes out tasting pretty much like you expected, maybe you should just be happy.
I agree. That's kind of my thought too, is I don't get caught up in the numbers. You know, it's fun. I have an engineering background. I like to do numbers and dial things in, but at the end of the day, if I'm drinking a pint that I don't enjoy and I hit all the numbers, it's not worth it, you know.
Well, I guess one of the things that will be interesting, the next round of the hop sampler, which my wife and I bottled just the other day, the HSBUs were around 8.7, 8.6, 8.8 HSBUs. So that's maybe the most bitter since I've been, you know, figuring this HSBU business, you know, that maybe that's the most bitter batch that we've had. So it'll be interesting to compare that, you know, against the now previous batches.
Is that because you want to just try a different? I mean, because you could definitely add less hops and keep the HS or the IBU reading where it's been in the past. Are you just trying to push it up a little bit just to see what happens?
Yeah, I wanted to bump it up a little bit and see what we thought. You know, just is what do we think of this higher HSBU? You know, is it too bitter?
Yeah.
You know, because we had this is a preview for the next hop sampler number 8. We have Motueka at 6.5%, and I put in a whole ounce of that, or 28 grams of that. Motueka at 6.5, Rakow at 8.6, and then Nelson Sauvin at 11.6. So, you know, so I put in the whole ounce or the whole 28 grams of the Motueka and then balanced the rest of them to that.
Okay.
So we'll just have to see. And the beers were, at bottling time, the beers were tasty. So
that's a good sign.
So what do you think, David? What do you think of the? I mean, do the lab results? Do they bolster? Do they take away from this whole hop stand bittering units formula concept? Am I knocked out of the water, or is it a good thing? Should I keep talking about it, or what do you think?
I think you've got something good dialed in that work. Like you said, it works for you. I think it'll work for other people too if they kind of follow the same approach. But I mean, 42 to 31 is a range, but it's not a considerable range. And you know, there's so many factors, like I said, that go into it. I think you've got something good going. And honestly, those next three beers sound pretty good. So if you want to send lab samples up for the lab again, we could probably run those again if you'd like.
Well, I probably will. Come to think of it, I'll send two of them up so that you can actually taste this batch.
Yeah, that was my next request. Is send an extra bottle so we can drink it.
And this time I used, instead of just the Pilsen Light extract, I used Breese Vienna dry malt extract.
Oh, okay.
So just to throw another little curve in there. So
yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate the hops that you sent, and they are delicious. And I really convey my thanks to the folks in the lab. I mean, it's, you know, I don't take their work lightly. I know that they've got a lot to do, and they do important stuff. And you know, it's really a privilege to have access to something like that. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it is. And I pass that on to them. I always give them big thanks because they're quick to turn things around like that. And they're very open to letting us drop things in. I don't do it very often, but it's fun to do, especially as a home brewer, just to see where you're actually ending up. So I'm glad to help.
And maybe they got to sample a little bit of those beers.
Yeah, I don't know that actually, if it all goes down the drain or if they sample or not, but I'll have to ask.
You can, maybe that's why the later on down the list the numbers seem to vary a little bit more on the
Well, that could be. I doubt it. I think they're pretty professional over there, but you never know.
Just kidding. Just teasing.
Yeah.
Well, all right, David. Anything else for the cause?
No, I appreciate all that you do, James. I listen to your show every week, and I'm still catching up on videos. I'm kind of behind on those, but I appreciate you doing this show every week and for so long. I've been a big fan, and you know, I'm lucky enough to work for a big brewery that I happen to love. But I'm still a home brewer, and wouldn't pass this up for anything.
Well, I really appreciate it. I'm a big fan of Bell's.
So, cool. Come up and see us sometime.
Oh yeah, we did. Now I have to tell a story on you. You drove us around town in Kalamazoo, and the whole time I kept singing under my breath, "I got a gal in Kalamazoo," and and I said to you, "God, you got to get sick of hearing that song." And what did you say?
I don't know that I hear it that often. That was probably one of the first times. I mean, I'm familiar with the song, but I don't hear it that often up here.
You're like, what is that song you're
saying? I'm familiar. I'm just, I don't hear it too often.
You're not hanging around with old enough guys.
maybe not.
Well, all right. Well, I hope that we can make it up there again someday and keep sending down the good beers. I appreciate everything, David.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Well, thanks very much again to David and the folks in the lab at Bell's. Bell Labs? No, something else. David says he even has more select versions of hops coming in the near future at Bell's General Store. Citra, Eldorado, and Simcoe. So stay on the lookout for those. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check all that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can find our logbooks, where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all those out at basicbrewingshop.com, and take a look at our silicone pints while you're there. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our websites provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.